Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 2 of the Screen Share Podcast. I'm Keaton Weiss. I got Justin Van Voorhis back here.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back if you were listening again. Thank you
yes,
for coming back.
Yes, so the first episode was about gangster movies, and now we are going to review the latest big gangster movie, which is why we recorded that first episode. The Many Saints of Newark, the Sopranos prequel, has just come out. It came out October 1st in theaters and on HBO Max. And this is a film that had been in the works for a while. People have been talking about it for quite some time. It is billed as the story of how Tony Soprano, came up. But it's really much more a story of Dickie Moltisanti, who is the father of Chris Moltisanti, one of the main characters, of course, in the HBO show. And it really is basically an origin story of the Soprano crime family, which was formerly the DiMeo crime family. And it really doesn't have much to do with Tony at all. The story is mostly centered around this Moltisanti character. And so it basically, takes place up against the backdrop of the race riots in Newark that were happening in the late 60s, and interactions between the black gangs in Newark and the Sicilian mob. That's basically the story. There are certain little Easter eggs that fans of the show will certainly catch while they're watching the movie. I thought that was one of the somewhat cool parts of the film. But I'm going to keep my powder dry and let Justin give his review first.
I enjoyed the film. I generally just enjoy gangster movies, and it is obviously its connection with the Sopranos are all very, very interesting, and the Easter eggs that you mentioned are all very cool to see. And it was just kind of funny seeing some of the characters play these younger versions of the characters that we've known, and which it was cool to see, but also it also was kind of like silly to see people like made up to look like young Polly Walnuts, made to look up like young Silvio Dante and stuff like that. And they're doing these impressions, essentially Billy Magnuson and John Magaro playing those two characters. So that was nice, and that was interesting to see. And Corey Stahl as Corrado was also very good as well. And it was nice, the connections, obviously, with the original show and everything like that. I think, though, my problem with the movie was that it seemed like an unfinished kind of season of a TV show. Did you ever see the David Chase film, Not Fade Away, which also starred John Magaro?
No, I didn't.
This was from about 7 years ago. James Gandolfini was in it. And it was about kind of a guy who's trying to come up in the music business in the 1960s, a young guy. And David Chase wrote and directed that movie. And I remember a review of that movie saying that, it's a good movie, but I'm kind of looking forward to season 2. And that's how this movie kind of felt. Like, it was like setting up. It's kind of episodic. There's really not much of a story, so to speak, which is okay, but it kind of sets up like a lot of different things that, felt like it would be paid off in further episodes of a TV show instead of what's supposed to be kind of like a 2-hour movie. And like the stuff with like Tony, which I didn't feel kind of like figured a lot into the plot. It just seemed like stuff that was being set up that would be further explored in further episodes of a TV show. There are things that are brought up, but they don't really kind of come up again, like the riot section of the film, which is an interesting backdrop to the movie. That really doesn't really come much into play like much later, but it's kind of like a big deal during the time of the film when it takes place. If you're going to go down that road, I would have liked more of that. I would have liked it to focus more on that. in the film, it kind of gives Harold McBrayer the impetus to kind of, I guess, start his own business, so to speak. But in terms of how that works with Dick and Moltisanti, as we'll talk a little bit about later, it doesn't really. I didn't find that there was a great arc to it, like a really satisfying arc to that storyline. So it's kind of unfocused. You think that it's maybe about Dickie Moltisanti. I guess he was like the heavily focused character in the movie. I don't know. I didn't find it to be that of a satisfying film in terms of a cohesive storyline.
Yeah, no, I mean, my problem with the movie is that it's really not very good. it's really quite bad, I think. And I'm surprised that David Chase did this, because he was so reluctant to make a film. He said, there's absolutely not going to be like a return season. There's absolutely not going to be a movie about what happens next. And then he ends up putting his name on this one, which is just not very good. I mean, the movie is just not very well written. It was written by Lawrence Connor, who only wrote 3 episodes of the show. I mean, if you're going to make a movie, how could you not get Terrence Winter to write the screenplay? Terrence Winter wrote dozens of episodes of the show. He wrote The Wolf of Wall Street. He's a fantastic writer. Lawrence Connor's like other film credits include like Planet of the Apes, Superman and Mighty 4. Joe Young. I love how Mighty Joe Young and Planet of the Apes. Like, I feel I need to go back and explore monkeys more. There's just a lot of material that I did not get off my chest in the Mighty Joe Young remake. So let me go back to that world and write the Planet of the Apes remake. So he's just not a very good writer. The dialogue is completely stilted and flat. All the Sopranos dialogue was sharp. It was like, it was the Terrence Winter dialogue. Wolf of Wall Street, same way. Fast, snappy, smart dialogue that you can't even keep up with. No, and this was not funny. The Sopranos was as much a comedy as anything else. And as much a drama as a gangster show. This was just front and center a gangster movie. What this felt like to me was a video game storyline. You know how they actually made a video game based on of the Sopranos. And you know how in video games, I'm not a gamer myself, but like the main character of a video game is always this like kind of nondescript, boring person, because they're the avatar for you who's controlling them, right? And that's what Dickie Moltisanti felt like. The character itself is not interesting. Tony Soprano is one of the most interesting characters in the history of TV, if not the most interesting character. Forgetting even about James Gandolfini's work that he put into that character, which was phenomenal. The character itself, it's this like psychologically tortured mob boss who's in therapy, and he's this kind of complex, vulnerable person. That's why we root for him, despite the fact that he is a horrible, murderous thief and a thug. He's complicated, and he has vulnerabilities, and he's got to hold both of these worlds together, his family life and his mob family. And the mob family are these kind of, you know, just kind of one-dimensional characters like Paulie Walnuts and Silvio Dante and stuff like that. You know, most of them are, you know, what you see is what you get. But he's this interesting guy who has to balance his life in the most high-stakes circumstances you could think of. And that's what makes the show so great, is that we can put ourselves in his shoes in so many ways. Like, I always would think the moments in The Sopranos that are most relatable to people are not when Tony is, like, raging at somebody, but when he's just exasperated. Like, every time the phone rings, you see his eyes sink and, ugh, what now? He picks it up. Yeah. Like, because those are moments we all experience. Like, not everybody's a mob boss, but everybody has that, oh, my God, this guy's calling Jesus Christ now. All right, yeah, what? Huh? And that just keeps going. It never stops. Just like it never stops for us. It never stops for real people in their real lives. It's just this daily grind that he's stuck in. And that makes us sympathize with him. The Moltisanti character in this is completely boring and not very sympathetic. He's not funny. He's not charming. He's not vulnerable. He has this weird relationship with this young woman that his father was banging before he smashed his head into the steering wheel. Spoiler. Although that takes place like 15, 20 minutes in, so it's not a major spoiler. But it's like, it's just such, it's just so not a compelling character.
Yeah.
To center this movie around.
Yeah, and you're like, and you're also describing, how long was that show on? 7 seasons? 7 years?
Well, it was basically 7. It was, they had the old two-parter.
Oh, right, the two-part season.
So it was basically 7. Yeah.
Yeah, you're describing like a character that like we spend a lot of time with that is like multi-layered over many different seasons, and for some reason they decide instead of doing like another series to do like a 2-hour movie that is kind of unfocused, but the character that it most focuses on is kind of just this more generic gangster character that, you know, we've seen before. We've all seen the gangster character who, like, you know, beats up his wife and finds out that they're cheating on them and stuff like that. And that's all we've seen before. And then you're also trying to, like, shove in this stuff a little bit about young Tony Soprano, which I didn't think was worth it either.
Interesting thing about that is that, you know, there was talk about the fact that Michael Gandolfini is playing his father's role.
Mm-hmm.
And is that going to work or is that not going to work, right? Because he's not a professional actor. I actually thought his performance is probably the best in the whole movie because his character is the only interesting character in the movie. There are no other characters that are worth investing in.
Yeah.
Like the scene in the when he gets called into the principal's office or whoever that lady was, the guidance counselor, to talk about how he cheated on the test, and she gets into talking about his mother and he says, "My mother, happy." You know, you read that you can read that same sort of torment in his face that you could in Tony Soprano's face. And I thought it was actually it was the best part of the movie. Like his scenes were the best scenes in the movie. That's not that there was a greatly like high bar, but those were the best parts I found.
I don't know. I wasn't really impressed with that performance. I mean, I find it very odd even that they decided to cast him. I'm like, you I don't really get the reason behind it. It's like, you're telling me that there is no one else that could play that role. That let's get his son, who has
no acting experience. Well, I guess maybe he looks like him, but
he really doesn't. I mean, you could find someone who actually, if that's the reason, then you could definitely, I'm sure you can find a real actor who looks that way. I don't know. It just, it didn't really strike me as that, like, compelling. Some, there are kind of, like, moments where, like, you know, it felt like he was, you know, doing an impression, which a lot of the characters are doing, impressions of the characters that are in these series, but it's like,
well, the Silvio Dante thing was just ridiculous. I mean, that was just laughable. Yeah, I mean, and that's another thing that made the show so great is that it was so perfectly cast that it's impossible to imagine anyone else in these roles.
Well, can we
talk
about...
And so one of the built-in flaws of the movie is that you have to cast other people in these iconic roles that no one can possibly associate with anyone else.
But can we talk about the worst performance in the movie, which is not a role that we've seen before, but it is a brand new character that we haven't seen, is that Ray Liotta is just awful.
Oh, he was just absolutely dreadful.
First of all, two things. So one of the things, it's not going to be, you know, spoiler, which, by the way, is, you know, you should listen to this after you see the movie.
We can go a little bit more before we do spoilers, though, because I feel like there's a lot to get to without spoilers. But go ahead.
All right. Well, first of all, it's a Ray Liotta thing. I want to get into this.
It's fine.
All right, fine. So, first of all, Ray Liotta is terrible in this. I mean, some of his line readings are so bad. The story that he tells about Frank Sinatra and this donkey in elevator, it's one of those stories that, like, if I heard that in person, I would be, like, cringing. I would be like, I was like, is this guy all right? You know, what is this? And some of his other line readings are so bad. But the most bizarre thing is that I'm going to get into spoiler territory. So if you don't want to hear this, skip over the next 2-3 minutes. So Ray Liotta is killed. He plays Dickie Moltisanti's father. His character is actually killed like about 10-15 minutes into the movie. And I remember, like, I've never seen trailers where it looked like he was in prison. Like, is that like a deleted scene? And so then there's this thing where it turns out that he is a twin brother. And so as some sort of like penance, Dickie Moltisanti starts going to see his twin brother in jail, who's in jail for killing a maid guy. And so he's playing a dual role. Why would you get one of the most pop-marked actors to play a two role? You tell me both brothers had faces like that when they had the exact same pop marks all over their face?
Yeah, I mean, I have twin boys. They're not that identical. Yeah, no, I mean, it, also, I was kind of relieved when he died. Figure, oh, great, I don't have to watch that anymore.
Yeah.
And then he comes back, and then, no, he plays a second character. And his, this guy's like, the worst actor in the movie in two roles.
Yeah. Why would you get the, like, the performance, the worst, and I was like, maybe this performance would be better. He's playing, like, a somewhat different character, like a more, I don't know, like, more
Well, he's more humble, you know, he's beaten more, down. Yeah. He's,
but yeah. Some of his line readings are so, like, stilted. In the second character, it's like it's a whole like other kind of different problem. Like there were so many problems with the first character he played. The second character, it's like, oh, this is very bad in a totally different way. But it's weird. It's like Ray Liotta, and you know, I was thinking about Ray Liotta because you know a movie that I wasn't in love with was Marriage Story, and one of the highlights of Marriage Story, I was like, oh yeah, Ray Liotta is good in this movie. But this movie where he's playing a gangster, which you think would be you know coming home for him, wow. Just wow.
Yeah, it was quite lousy, but like that Frank Sinatra story, like everything about this movie was just lazy. Nothing really worked. I mean, even the Easter eggs, which we'll talk a bit about now. Like, first of all, I knew that there was going to be the thing where Junior says Tony never had the makings of a varsity athlete, because that's a major hang up for Tony Soprano in the show. Is, you know, a lot of his insecurities stem back to his childhood where, you know, he didn't want the mob life. You know, he wanted to be a football star, but couldn't. And so that was a line that we knew was said to him as a kid. So we knew that was going to be there. The Joe Jerkoff line, I had a feeling that was going to find its way into the movie as well.
What's that?
He gets called Joe Jerkoff when he's trying to get beer for the party.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that in the movie, but what's the reference to the TV show, though?
There's a couple of scenes in the show where he refers to himself as Joe Jerkoff. I feel like Joe Jerkoff. And I think Christopher Moltisanti also refers to himself as Joe Jerkoff, too. Uh-huh. You know, it's just like a thing that, you know, got through, like one of those phrases that gets thrown around when you're a kid at you. And so I had a feeling that was going to be there also. Now, the two more significant sort of Easter eggs, one is really more of a plot point than an Easter egg, is the fact that we learn, and this is a major spoiler, how Dickie Moltisanti meets his end, how he is killed and who kills him. And we learn that it is not the cop that Tony says it is in the TV show. So in the TV show, Tony is sitting in the car with Christopher outside this cop's like retirement party. And he says, you know, the guy in there is the guy who shot your old man, because he wants Christopher to go and get his vengeance. And so Christopher goes to kill the cop, and the cop says, I don't know what you're talking about. Whoever told you I killed your father is lying. Please, you know. And Christopher says, well, even if that's true, for whatever reason, my boss wants you dead. And so whether he's lying to me or not, I don't really know, but I have to whack you anyway. And he does. And we find out from this movie that, in fact, Tony was lying about that. So that adds a cool little layer to the show. And then the other Easter egg that I thought was actually could have worked, like the only one that I thought, okay, this is a cool, unexpected thing, was the morning after Dickie gets killed. Of course, he didn't know he was going to be killed the night before. He arranged to meet Tony at Holston's, which is the diner that the last scene of the series takes place in. You know, where Tony is looking up, and you had the same thing where the bell rings every time the door opens and we see two customers walk through. And I actually thought this would actually be a cool way to end the movie with Tony waiting for his uncle to come through the front door of the diner, just like in the last scene of the show before that, you know, famous cut to black. He's waiting for Meadow to come in. I thought that would be a really cool way to end the movie. I could almost swing like a 2-star review if they end it right here. But they don't. Then they go to this like stupid ham-handed funeral scene where he takes his uncle's pinky in his hand and the music comes on. And it's just like nothing really worked. Like even that, like that was the coolest part of the movie, was to put that Holston scene in there. Because the final scene of the series is one of the most iconic scenes in the history of TV. And so I thought that could have worked. And it kind of almost worked. But even that didn't quite work. Because they had to go ahead and put this extra thing on the end. And so those are some of the Easter eggs that you'll find as a fan of the show. The other thing that I thought was struck me is that the waiter in the restaurant looks curiously similar to the waiter that Christopher and Pauly end up murdering behind the restaurant in that really brutal episode where he comes out to haggle with them about the tip and they throw a rock at him. They don't mean to kill him. They just mean to rough him up because he's giving him a hard time. And then he starts having a seizure and they got to shoot him so that he doesn't rat on them. But that waiter looks curiously like the waiter in the movie. It obviously couldn't be the same person because it was an old man, but maybe it was maybe like the waiter's son or something. Yeah, right. But yeah, so there were some kind of neat things that fans of the show will latch onto, but not nearly enough. And it just doesn't have nearly enough in common with the show. It does not have an interesting lead character. It's a period piece. We talked about this in the previous episode, so I won't get into this now. One of the things that made The Sopranos really special is that it took place in modern times, which made the show very relatable, because we felt like we really shared a world with these characters, whereas this, like Goodfellas, Casino, The Untouchables, most of the famous mob movies, is a period piece, which kind of puts it under glass a little bit. And so it just didn't have any of the mojo that the show had. Well, I feel like it really had none of it.
Well, what was your thoughts on the backdrop? Well, for like the first part of the film, is these riots in Jersey. It's like...
It's kind of an interesting choice.
It seems, though, that if, you know, you wanted to do that, either you spend more time on it, or you make that its own movie, which apparently is what David Chase originally intended to do many, many years ago, is make a whole movie about that. But it seemed unnecessary.
The only time any kind of plot gets going is when Dickie's girlfriend starts, you know, you can't really say cheating on him because it's not a formal relationship, but she starts seeing Harold.
Yeah.
That sets in motion what is really the only plot of the movie, and that's at about the hour and 10-minute mark.
Right.
The first hour is almost like there's no plot at all. The first hour is almost like if Robert Altman made a gangster movie. It's just a collection of scenes, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Right.
Right? I mean, like you said, I didn't really have a problem with that. But there's really no forward momentum to the movie whatsoever for the first hour.
You think that once that get going is that this whole movie is going to be the back and forth between Moltisanti and Harold McBrayer, and it's going to – there's a big shootout. There's and that's what happens. There's a kind of a big shootout where this character Buddha gets killed, and then they retaliate, and there's this – actually, no, I think that's actually the same scene. Anyways, but there still is a back and forth between those two kind of rival gangs, so to speak. And you think it's going to culminate into something. And it looks like that's what's going to happen at the end of the movie because someone spots him at this hotel. And the next day, like, he tells Sylvia, I think, okay, we'll do it tomorrow, something like that. And even there's this scene prior to that with Harold McBrayer and this other gangster, a real life gangster, Frank Lucas, who that's what American Gangster is about, the Denzel Washington character.
Right.
And you think it's going to all culminate in like one final thing, but it doesn't. And what's interesting is that, and you know, you could like this, you may not, similar to what David Chase did on the show, the movie kind of subverts expectations because going into the finale, you think that that's what's going to happen. There's going to be one culminating battle between these two gangsters once and for all. And I had forgotten about what had happened to Dickie Moltisanti on the show, But I guess that's a known thing that he got shot in his driveway. And so instead of having this big battle between him and Harold McBrayer, he's shot in the driveway. Well, we turned out it was because he insulted Corrado when he slipped and fell. And so it subverts expectations where you think it's going to go one way, but it actually goes this other way, which is an interesting idea, how that's kind of like what life in the mafia is, how dangerous these people are, is that you could get whacked in your driveway for insulting this guy because you laughed at him when he slipped and fell on the stairs, which is an interesting kind of comment, like, on the mafia. But in terms of, like, a film, it left me very unsatisfied. And I guess the true finale is, you know, like you said, when he doesn't show up to Holstings that day. And the ending with that funeral just kind of seemed like a little rushed, a little tacked on. And when the theme song comes on, it doesn't feel like really earned. I didn't feel that it's like that was like the becoming of Tony Soprano. I hadn't really felt that we had earned that in that film, in that moment.
Yeah, if anything, I didn't even think it made much sense. Like, the scene before the supposed meeting at Holston's is when Tony Soprano is basically rejecting that life. You know, he's telling his father, I don't want any of this shit. If it's stolen, I don't want any part of this. Like, where was the turnaround moment? I didn't buy that there was any transition there at all. I just didn't buy it. Like, it'd be one thing if it ended in the diner, just like the show ends in the diner, where he's waiting for his uncle. That, you know, because that's a loose end. But one of the great things about the show was the amount of loose ends it just kind of left alone. I mean, obviously, the final moment of the series, the cut to black. But then, you know, like, whatever happened to the Russian guy who got away from Paulie and Christopher in the woods in the famous Pine Barrens episode? Did Silvio Dante live or die? When the show ends, he's in a coma. We don't know if he's ever going to wake up. You know, the show was always sort of willing to create certain mysteries, and so much of these characters' pasts were mysteries. One of the mysteries that the show left is, did Tony lie about how Christopher's father died, right? So we didn't need a resolution to that. And so, you know, this was just unnecessary. It like, watching it, I understood why David Chase was so reluctant to do it. Because there was really no way to make it work. There just really wasn't. Because these characters in the show are so iconic and so memorable, and so their own entities, that to have other people play them, just that alone, like, built into the premise of the movie are so many flaws to begin with that you really can't overcome no matter what. Two more things I want to talk about. You had Vera Farmiga playing Tony's mother, which, again, did not love that performance.
Really?
Didn't think there was enough attention paid there. I mean, it was okay, but
I really like that. I think she's just always great. I never had a problem.
No, she's a good actor. I'm not saying that she was bad in it. I'm just saying, let me not criticize the actor. It's more the writing. Like, it's more like the only performance that was terrible was Ray Liotta. Yeah. But none of the other performances I found particularly compelling. It's not necessarily the actor's fault. It's just I didn't think the writing was very good. I didn't think there was enough time. Like,
right.
We never really got to see the true evil of Tony's mother. Like, in the show, one of the reasons why we sympathize with Tony as much as we do is because we get the sense that his mother really traumatized him, because she is an evil, villainous character in those first two seasons of the show. She advises Junior to have him killed in the first season of the show. Like, she's a true menace. And we didn't get that from any of these scenes. We got that she was kind of this dark cloud, right? She's kind of a miserable person. But we didn't get any sense of, like, trauma that she inflicted on him. So that's one thing. And you can say what you think about that. But I also just want to say, like, the choice to have Christopher narrate from the grave, like, again, why? You know, that was kind of a neat thing when it first kind of started, something you didn't expect. But again, why? And then the last line of the movie, that's the guy I went to hell for. Nothing worked in this movie. The writing was so... It was such a lazily written movie. It was not funny. The dialogue was not sharp. It wasn't fast moving. The other thing about the show that was so great is it never talked down to the audience. it just went at its own pace. And often you'd have to watch an episode two or three times before you catch everything. That's how smart and fast the show was and how great the dialogue was. There were always a million layers of subtext under every line. One of the things David Chase said, he said part of the fun of writing the series is that in almost all cases, whenever one of the mob guys is talking, they mean the exact opposite of what they're saying, you know, because they're constantly bullshitting each other and themselves. And so there's just layers and layers of subtext under every line. Here, there was none of that. There was absolutely none of that. There was a lot of stilted sort of exposition about who these characters were, right? Just like setting things up. And then the dialogue was slow. None of it read as authentic. I shouldn't say none of it, but very, 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 very little of it. It did not have that snappy, fast-paced realism that all the dialogue in the series had.
All right, so let me just respond to all that. Well, first of all, you know, going back, it almost like, and this speaks to the Vera Farmiga thing, it's like none of these characters really have very strong arcs. It's like they seem like they are leaving breadcrumbs and setting up things as if there was going to be 9 more episodes of this. And so while I really enjoyed the Vera Farmiga performance, it wasn't a complete performance. It wasn't entirely there wasn't much of a strong point to it besides being there. And that's the thing with the rest of the movie is that it really isn't setting up anything. It really doesn't. Besides the whole thing with Dickie Maltasante and Christopher's father getting killed and how he got killed, it really doesn't affect how you look at the series at all. And which I think is like, is that the point of making the movie to begin with, to see how these characters got to where they are? Is that the point of making a prequel? So I'm really not even like, and when you spend like so little time on your main character in a 2-hour movie, that's supposed to set up a 7-year series, it's a little too unfocused to actually make a dent in how you feel about what's going on in the rest of the series. So I don't know. David Chase has talked about it, if the movie did well, that he was potentially doing a sequel series about Tony Soprano's in his 20s that he would write with Terrence Winter. But the movie bombed, so that's probably not going to happen. And like it was kind of a lukewarm reception anyways. And finally, I think to the last point is that regurgitate. You were talking about so much.
Narration.
The narration. So the narration, which apparently was a last minute thing. Apparently, the movie actually began with an Edie Falco cameo that I guess got scrapped. And so I guess to make sure the audience knew the connection to the show, they believe they added the Imperioli narration on last minute, which it doesn't even really play a big part. It like comes and goes. I think it's only like in like 3 or 4 spots in the movie. There's some in the beginning, there's some in the middle, and there's very little at the end. So that also just kind of, which is weird because Sopranos wasn't narrated. It was a straightforward series, and suddenly you're using this. Having Michael Imperioli narrate it, it's almost like a callback to Goodfellas or Casino, which is the thing about like Sopranos, it was nothing like those movies, and here you're kind of referencing those movies by having it narrated.
Exactly. I mean, that's a great point. Is like one of the things that made The Sopranos so great and so fresh and so exciting is that it did not traffic in any of those kinds of tropes.
Right.
You know, and if you're going to traffic in those kinds of tropes, you know, It at least it has to be good.
Yeah.
You know, this was just a mediocre version, a barely mediocre version. I would say a bad version of all of those previous movies and a bad execution of those very like familiar devices. You know, and so, yeah, overall, I just thought it was quite bad. I mean, if they're going to go to narration, they should have just gone all the way and had a scene of Christopher in hell at the beginning talking to the camera. Yeah. I'm going to tell you a story about how I got here.
That would have been more interesting.
Adriana's there too.
Right, exactly. Oh, that would be interesting.
Happily ever after in hell.
Yeah, exactly. It would have been interesting. It feels like it was chopped down. And I think that if you were going to do this, it shouldn't have been a movie. It should have been either a much longer movie or it should have been a TV show in itself.
Yeah, like a 4 or 5 part series that they could put on streaming or something.
Because it feels, because it feels just like there's too much that you're putting in this movie that just does not get paid off and ultimately kind of a tease.
Yeah. All right, I guess that's everything we got. Subscribe to our podcast, our YouTube channel, and check out screensharemedia.com for reviews, rants, and retrospectives, and different lists, articles, and things like that. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Peace out.